possession. You see where God's taking this ownership of these people by them keeping this covenant relationship. And that's this adhesion covenant that we talked about Wednesday night, that they would adhere to this agreement. And then we're going to see if the conclusion here in chapter 24, the covenant ceremony. And that's where the covenant is ratified by, of all things, blood. It's ratified by blood. And so Moses then took the blood, sprinkled it on the people. And you begin to see here shadows. Shadows of what we see in the new covenant. What we see under Christ. Because what happened at the very, when Christ died, what were we? Romans 5. When we died, we were enemies. We were dead. Yeah, and we were sinners. You would think we weren't even redeemable. And yet God chose, not because we were just special, but He chose us because it was His will to redeem us in Christ. And then you began to see, here's this presentation of law. Here's this presentation of God's will that we would agree to keep this covenant ratified in blood. And we can see where these conclusions lead us under this new covenant. But then you have fellowship as a result. And then that leads to service. And so the end result is that we are going to be in a covenant relationship with God. And we are going to obey. But it's just not for the sake of obeying for God's glory, because God is doing a lot of I wills. I counted at least 13 from one translation in chapter 23, where if you fully obey, if you carefully listen, if you hearken to my voice, then I will. And He's going to do a lot of wonderful things. He's going to do a lot of wonderful things for them. So, was there more to covenant keeping than simply obeying it? We talk about, God's just all about obedience. The Old Testament's just all about obedience and keeping law. And we use the idea, the Old Testament's this and the New Testament is this, and they're really very different. When in fact they're not. Not very different at all. And if the Old Testament was to be the schoolmaster to the New Testament, then what we're going to find out, they're very, very much alike. So was there more? It's kind of rhetorical, isn't it? Well, yeah, I think so. So what was the first thing we see? If you indeed obey, there's the call for any adherence to the covenant. There's forgiveness of sins. What? Old Testament? People can have their transgressions pardoned? Absolutely. Exodus 23:21. Beware of him. And it's interesting, I think we see the Godhead in this section. Right here where the Father, Jehovah, is speaking to Moses. And there's this him. Beware of him and obey his voice. Do not provoke him, for he will not pardon your transgressions, for my name is in him. And so here you have a benefit of being in covenant with the Lord because you have access to forgiveness of sins. He also says there's going to be fellowship with him. And so, again, here's this verse we just quoted. If you listen carefully to what he says and do all that I say, I will be an enemy to your enemies and I will oppose those who oppose you. And so you can see what God had already done to the Egyptian gods. You see what he did to Egyptian's army. You saw what he did to the Amalekites. Or is that Amalekites? And so what is God going to do if they're in covenant with him? Well, he's going to be their captain of their army. Okay, so the next item is there's proper worship that is going to be a part of this covenant relationship, and that's going to increase knowledge. Knowledge of God. Knowledge of themselves in relation to who God is. This is going to give them an advantage when they worship. And so this is the negative idea that's found in chapter 23. Do not bow down before their gods or worship them or follow their practices. you must demolish them and break their sacred stones to pieces. And so it's not just enough that there is proper sound worship, but you are careful not to allow anything else to interfere. Because one of the laws, he's going to say, if there's a sorceress among you, you are to kill her. It is capital punishment to practice sorcery. There's another verse, and maybe you'll when we get to this class exercise, you'll enlighten me on this. But there's a law that says, if you worship any other god than Jehovah, you are to be destroyed. You are to be destroyed. I mean, that is quite striking to have that in the Book of the Covenant. Okay, maybe that's why Josiah tore his clothes. Because every street corner, there was an idol. He was tripping over idols on his way to the palace. There were so many. And here, I'm sure he read that law and went, what? We all need to die. Okay, so we have the abundance of life. Abundance of life in this covenant relationship if we indeed obey. And so he says in verse 25 and 26, second part of 25, I will take away sickness from among you, and none will miscarry or be barren in your land. I will give you a full lifespan. And you think about that's what everybody tries to achieve today, right? This is their goal, you know, to have health and prosperity. And yet God is going to give them an abundance of life. And then we have a perpetual inheritance. And this is where he's going to address the fact that here's the extent of your borders when you enter this land. Here's what I am giving you when you enter my rest. Here's the boundaries. I want y'all to think about this, because this you know, set me on a little bit of a tangent with the study. And here we have the borders. We have the Red Sea, and we have the Mediterranean Sea and the Euphrates River, and we have this massive, huge border in which they'll possess. And what's our inheritance? Infinity. There are no borders. In Revelation, the gates are open. What can you fathom? Can you fathom what God is giving us as an inheritance? If you indeed obey, if you are indeed in covenant with me, I give you heaven. I give you infinity. Anyway, that just kind of struck me when I was thinking about these borders. Okay. So, the Book of the Covenant would direct them to better living. Because isn't that what all about going to church is? You know, I could talk like Joel Osteen, and we could, you know, about better living. But actually, it's more than just me treating my neighbor right. Book of Covenant was to lead them to holy service. It was about them being a holy nation. Isn't that what he had said? That I want you to be a special possession, a holy nation. Is what you're going to be to me. And so what this Book of the Covenant is going to do is it's going to lead us to greater holiness, because it's going to direct us in this way. If you think about it, these are really baby steps for them. He's not leading them directly to Christ and the new covenant. He's giving them baby steps in order for them to begin this journey toward greater holiness. And so from, I saw this, I know I shouldn't be on Facebook with all these apologetic pages and stuff, but it's very fascinating to hear people's discussions. And so one of them was about, there was a biblical discussion on homosexuality. And boy, I'll tell you what a hot topic type thing. But there was one poster that said something that really struck me. The gospel does not lead a homosexual to heterosexuality. The gospel leads a homosexual to holiness. And I think if we began to change our mindset that what we're doing when we are living the gospel, we're being an example to others who are not believers, they need to understand this. When they understand we are seeking holiness, meaning we are being consecrated and set apart to the glory of God, it changes the whole conversation, the whole dynamic about why one would pursue covenant with our Creator. Because it stems from this idea. Our goal is holiness. Our goal is not to convert them to heterosexuality. Our goal is holiness. And that's whether it's simple behavior, whether it's just simple unbelief, secular, naturalistic ideas. It's all about encouraging people to greater holiness. And so I found this in the Expositor's Bible, and I thought this was well said, and I wanted to repeat this here. And so he's quoting the text where he says, "And they said unto Moses, speak thou with us, and we will hear, but let not God speak with us, lest we die." You remember what we discussed in class? How when God spoke the Ten Commandments, they could not bear under the weight of God's voice. I can't even begin to talk about this. I just don't understand how this was so weighty for them. But they could not bear it lest they die. And here was the conclusion. It is the same instinct that we have already so often recognized, the dread of holiness. In the hearts of the impure, the sense of unworthiness which makes a prophet cry, "Woe is me, for I am undone, and an apostle, depart from me, for I am a sinful man." And you think when people, even men like Isaiah, who we would consider a very righteous man, who sees God, for that matter, a vision, he says, "Woe is me," because he's seeing a glimpse of God's holiness. They're going to be the elders in chapter 24 that somehow they're only going to see what God is standing on. That's all they're going to see, what God is standing on. And it's all that they can bear. They can't even bear to see His figure. They could not be able to bear to see it. So God only reveals what He's standing on, which is fascinating. Okay, let's get right here into the text.
Danny,
oh, yeah.
Just one, maybe another way of saying the same thing. As Americans, we've been a part of a country that began in opposition to the Church of England, which was corrupt and carnal, and so this concept of separation of church and state, it informs our thinking. We can't get out of that framework.
Mm-hmm.
I think they wouldn't have had no clue what that meant.
No.
Because if you look through here, you can read these. If you look at it with that American viewpoint,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? How I handle when my ox gores somebody doesn't seem to be at all related to some religious activity.
Right.
But there was no separation. It was just and so you see in here scrambling. I don't mean to mean disorganized. I just mean stirred, blended together, personal responsibility, personal purity, personal action, and national identity, and national cleanliness and acceptability to God and everything. We can't hardly revamp that as Americans. We don't understand that.
Yeah,
and but if you talk about the baby steps of life, well, yeah, that's not my business. That's not mm-hmm. my personal business. That's just part of the whole system, at least in this law.
Yeah, and that's what's so striking about this study. Marty's introducing a good segue into this because this is so intricately involved in their life. And that should be the case for us. We don't put on our church clothes and become Christians on Sunday. It's a 24/7 responsibility. The way we conduct ourselves and live throughout the week. So there's probably seven different ways to go about this, but I'm going to present six categories that make up the Book of the Covenant. Scholars have done their best to make this all work. It just didn't make sense in my mind because it was way below my education level for me to I'm way below. My education level is way below some of these things that have been revealed. So you're going to see my mind here as we break this out. So And I want you to think about this because we're going to mention six categories, so we're going to have six groups if we can make this work this morning. Okay, we have the laws of worship first introduced, and it's basically just him recounting basically what we see in the Ten Commandments. And some have said that the Ten Commandments are like just this overview, and then what the Book of the Covenant is an extension of those. And you can kind of see in those laws how they can kind of fit these different commandments. But at the very beginning, you're going to see no idols, this altar of earth, meaning no huge stones. You can't be man-made, which is going to be a distinction from the rest of the world. And then you've got this propriety about proper dress that you're going to have. And then he's going to go to the next section, which are human rights. And what we see in these human rights, because the very first thing he's going to talk about is slavery. Slavery. And so here come the naysayers and the critics and the skeptics. Look at the Bible condoning slavery. Look at this. This is terrible. And I've actually read some Christian teaching on how this was appalling, that God would condone slavery. That's not what this is. Not at all. Obligatory welfare is what this was. This was individual responsibility for the welfare of someone else who happened to be indebted to them. And so God is going to lay out a plan how this will not be abused, because it could easily become abused like it did in Egypt, and for that matter, anywhere else when people are the poor are being taken advantage of. And so we'll see marital protections.
Marshall. Oh, sorry. It's just...
Is that Marshall?
Is this how you treat your wife? Marshall law.
I told you, low education here. Government schools.
I just learned
marital.
Did you make up that word animalia?
That's what I did. But I did find out it is a word.
It is a word.
It is a word. It means animals, animal kingdom. So I was right, because I'm sitting there, familial animals. Yeah. But yeah, so you have. So he's going to talk about the death penalty. And guess what? If you go and take somebody and you make them a slave, what's the penalty? Death. God does not condone slavery. In his law, he says, if you steal a man and make him your slave,
or sell him,
it is death. So he's going to talk about the death penalty, and then again, we talk about the animal homicide, gorging somebody. I guess it would happen. They're all together. There's a bunch of people, and there's a bunch of oxen. I guess so. Okay, let's keep going here so we got time. Property rights. So there's punitive award. There's a lot about how to properly satisfy damages, reparations, whatever that might be. And then there's this way of determining that, which actually we see that in our own court of law, which we see indirect evidence, which would be circumstantial evidence, and then you'll see direct evidence, which this might actually, well, circumstantial would be testimony evidence, right? Or am I got that wrong? But then there'll be direct evidence because there's this animal dead. You know, what happened? How did it die? You know, and so you've got some other forms of evidence for property rights. Then you're going to have laws of morality. And so I've grouped them this way because I want you to think about it in this context. Predatorial behavior. And so we see sexual predators. Remember, you mean a man's going to sell his daughter as a slave to a man so he can have a wife? Because we think of the sex trade that occurs and how horrible, and it's probably one of the worst things that define humanity. And yet what we see is laws that protect these women and these young girls from this very thing happening. And so laws are put into place to ensure she's protected. Matter of fact, if she is sold as a slave and we don't respect her, she gets all the benefits of a wife. Forever, she gets it all. So it's actually to minimize the desire or the temptation to participate in some pretty wicked behavior. And so you've got spiritual predators, that's the sorcerers, and those that would introduce idolatry. There are financial predators about taking advantage of the poor. And then finally, animal predators. And these are people, you know, going after the animals. Like, you know, after an animal's torn to pieces, you can't eat the carcass, you know, kind of thing that's going there, that they would just go after these things. Then we have civil laws, which are laws of prejudice, false testimony, laws of bribery, and laws of the Sabbath. And he'll, and that part of it's where, you know, the land will be farmed for 6 years, and then on the seventh year, you're going to let that land rest so that the land can recover. And then we have the religious feast and conclusion, which is the unleavened bread, the Feast of Weeks, and the Feast of Tabernacles. These three primary feasts that are being introduced here. And again, this isn't, Book of Covenant is not the complete law. These are going to be expounded. And so when we read through Numbers and Leviticus and even Deuteronomy, we're going to see the laws expand, I guess, to that 613 that they talk about. And then there's the other idea, and I don't know how to word this, but it almost seems like it's provisional law, where when a circumstance or a situation occurs, it's not quite certain how to approach the law, and then God gives new revelation as to how that law is to be implemented. Okay, good, because we're going to have about 15 minutes to look at this. Okay, so here's our six groups, and then here are the two questions I want you to look at. I'll let you look at it for just a second while I think about seeing one. Okay, you guys are group one. Y'all might need to join Marty.
Okay.
Y'all will be group two. Group three. Group four. Five. Six.
Huh?
Quentin can join number six when he comes back. Okay, so here's the deal. Okay, one, I should have numbered these so y'all would get lost. Two, three, four, five, six. And if you don't know what number, just get him a number. Okay, so here's the first question. In what way are these covenant laws? Now think about this. What we said at the very beginning takes full responsibility and gives up personal rights. Okay? Think about that as a covenant concept. In what way are these? And by the way, in your text, there's a bunch of laws. Just pick one or two. Don't do them all. Just pick one law that just stands out in the text that helps to answer these questions. In what way are these covenant laws? And then the second question is, how do these laws help to lead to holy service? Meaning it goes beyond just, oh, I got to obey a law because the speed limit is 55. There's actually a greater goal in mind with that law, and you're going to tell me what that is. Okay. And we'll do this for like 6-7 minutes.
I like that idea.
life.
You know, when you're before, we talk about carving, that's
how long it is. You've got the choice to do that.
And that's kind of obligated. You just tell this is
or accidental or manslaughter.
How I would do it. I'm not working. How I would do it.
Looks like this is not a problem for you. She shall not go out. That's not a command.
It's in the Bible,
but it didn't read that way. She shall not go out. So that phrase, I believe, means he wasn't planning.
All right, everyone, we're going to go ahead and shotgun through this. So, we're going to start with number six, religious feast. Back here, religious feast. So, how are we going to answer these two questions as we look at these feasts?
Okay, so we, when it talks about, we picked one.
That's perfect.
That's your best produce of the land.
Giving God the first fruits. So not only does it, not only is it sacrificing for God, but also, and then in the holy service, it's sort of a lesson on how we should approach everything.
Take yourself out of this equation a little bit. You're serving for others.
Right.
Give God your best always. Even that means like sacrifice a little bit of what you think might be best.
Yeah, so why would we keep our first fruits?
Because they're the best.
They're the best.
We took care of them, we grew them, we were
invested in them. You want to reap the benefits of your labor and stuff like that.
That's right. Yeah, because we might need them. We might need them.
Yeah.
You know, by God saying, you give it up.
There's no assurance that there'll be more.
That's the problem, isn't it? But we don't worship idols. We don't worship gold and silver. We worship an eternal God who promised, I will provide for you. And so, I shouldn't have a problem giving up a lot. Because he's always going to provide. But very good, very good. All right, number five, civil laws.
One way are these covenant laws, because those civil laws involve the giving up of rights, both of the innocent and the guilty. Innocent man finds an ox, the world probably says, well, it's yours to give you, but he has to give it back. So that theme runs through the giving up of rights on both sides. And how do these laws lead to holy service? Well, the idea of holiness is being set apart. So this is very distinct. These laws are very distinct from the world around them. So they're set apart. And particularly, I like verse 13. It says, don't even make mention of the name of other gods. Neither let it be heard out of your mouth. And so I think those are the two things that we discussed.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Yeah, I thought one thing that was striking to me is that even if my enemy, something bad happens with my enemy, I still need to go do the right thing. I still need to go do the right thing. Because the instinct is, well, they deserve that. They're such evil, bad people. They're terrible neighbors. They cheat, steal, lie. And then something bad happens to them. Well, they just deserve that. But the Book of the Covenant says, if something bad happens to them, their car breaks down, and you're pulling out of the neighborhood, and you see their car over on the side of the street with a blown tire, and they're doing this, you stop and you change their tire. You help them. Because they deserve it. Did the Israelites deserve being rescued out of slavery? No. You do it because you are teaching that person what holiness looks like. What God looks like. They may know nothing about God because they definitely aren't going to read it out of the Bible. But if they see it living in you, that's going to be impressive. And that's going to maybe cause them to think differently.
Well, the first verse there again shows that you're going to be different.
Yeah.
Don't go with false reports. Don't turn in with a wicked person. You're going to be different.
That's right. And if you think about all these different types of civil laws here, these are all applicable for us today. If at the very least the principle supporting the law is applicable for us today. Anybody have anything else they want to say about this one? Laws of morality.
16, sexual immorality. If a man entices a virgin who is not betrothed and lies with her, he should surely pay the bride price for her and be his wife.
Okay.
You can't just do what you want to do. It becomes a covenant when you pay that price and you marry her and make that covenant.
That's right. So you can think about what the law does in a couple ways, right? So what does it do for someone who is enticed? And I guess in this case it would be the male. What's it going to do for him if he's tempted with a woman or a girl, whatever? What's the law going to help him do?
Think of the long term consequences.
What's
the cost?
What's it going to cost me? Everything. Because you're going to have to marry this woman, and you're going to provide for her the rest of her life, or the rest of your life, is what you're going to have to do. And so you can see how in this, it protects the man as much as it protects the woman in this case.
And then holy service with that, hopefully, through that covenant now that they, because of that, then that leads to holy service.
That's right. Yeah. Very good. Very good. All right, let's jump over here to property rights.
We look at animal rights, and you know, if an animal falls in a pit, it looks at responsibility. If it was just an accident, you're going to divide the carcass, and you sell one of your animals and divide the money, and so you're going to make that whole. But if you were careless, if you knew this was going to happen, you're going to pay a higher price. And if you intentionally steal an animal, it's a higher price, yeah. So then the consequences are proportioned to the responsibility you took to prevent it.
Right. Okay. Very good. All right.
We looked at the men that fight with them, and the pregnant woman gives birth.
Yes.
I mean, they have the responsibility of the husband can do something. You know, if the baby and the mother are okay, everything's fine. But if not, the man has, you know, the man's supposed to be punished. So the husband gets to decide if there's any harm.
That's
if there's
good.
Life to life, eye to eye kind of thing.
Yeah.
If you're responsible, the one I was thinking of is when the person has to take care of the person that is, well, that's the same thing as the man that's injured. They have the loss of time and the provide for. They're giving up. You know, they have something they have to do. They pay for what they have to do.
Okay. So, how do these two laws help us see this concept of covenant?
There's no such thing as it's an accident. It's not my fault.
Yeah, it's you taking ownership. And it's being considerate of the other party, what they actually lose. And, you know, in that's a real problem with any argument, any conflict in which we are on the opposing side. We're always only thinking about what's going on with us. We have to stop for a moment and think, what's going on in their life at this moment? What are they thinking? What are they dealing with? And I think if we change our focus on the opposing party, we can begin to develop empathy. Can have empathy for that person. And then that's going to then begin to change our view of what this conflict really is. It's going to change the nature of that conflict. It may actually turn out a better outcome as a result. And so this is how it's going to lead to greater holiness, because conflict resolution is all about glorifying God at that point, as opposed to, you know, I've got to protect my rights from that. All right, where are we at here? Human rights?
Yeah, we have that. Alejandro picked verse 13, which is a man is not lying in wait, right? The verse before is if you kind of decide to kill a guy and you do. The next one seems to be it's not premeditated. And reading more carefully, I think it even means unintentional. And that is, but the man's still dead.
Yes.
And your life is over. Mm-hmm. You didn't say here, but we learned from, I think, Numbers in Deuteronomy about the cities of refuge.
Yes.
So that's how that all began. But you know, in fact, in Deuteronomy, it expands the story like you're in the forest and you have an axe and the axe head comes off and it hits the guy and he dies. And
yeah.
I mean, totally. In fact, the word unintentional is actually used in Deuteronomy.
Right.
And yet, despite all that, ruled an accident by an investigating committee, you know, your life is over. You get to, I don't mean death, you get to go to the cities of refuge.
Yeah.
And that's where you stay. And so you wonder why that is, and to answer the two questions.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Covenant lost and the holiness thing. Deuteronomy explains it, really. He just says, so innocent blood shall not be shed in the midst of your land, which Yahweh your God gives you. And that's in that context, not in the context of the next verse, which is if a man hates his neighbor and does something terrible to him. So the sense is, from the standpoint of holiness, that an innocent blood has been shed and a price must be paid.
Yeah, yeah, very good.
And it doesn't seem fair to our American minds, you know, that your life would be over.
Yeah,
but you are careful for related to your covenant.
Yeah.
You're careful for the life.
That's right.
Of the family, the man. Yeah.
Very good.
And I'm sorry, you guys. We'll make it up on the C9. Somehow.
It's obvious. Anyway. It's actually the easiest one.
Yeah, sure. Anyway, thank you guys. I appreciate it. Great class.
Thank you, Dan. Share your slides.